events that happen to be considered. First is the compensation of Yakum, finding that after 20 years, Asa, as he returned from the house of love. Now, Hirsch introduces his chapter by Ishlach, which is in chapter 32, sentence 4. This is it with the following point. As previously we had mentioned, that Yaakov left his father's house, we spoke about it last week, without taking any money with him. It wasn't intended to be poverty. And why? And we explained it according to Hirsch's idea that Yaakov personified the human goddess who literally starts without anything and is able, with his faith in God and his ability, to be able to elevate himself and situate himself in a proper path. But now, he returned as a rich man. He acquired his wealth, as he said, by his own work and his own labor. And he wanted to pacify Asa. He wanted to show Asa that really, I'm not rich from the blessing. I had nothing from the blessing. I was a stranger, and I had to dwell with Laban, and I was forced to stay there. The Hefer Arata, I was forced to stay there so long because I would have come home earlier. But 6 years ago, he said, I just had a family. I didn't have a penny to support them of my own. And this road of 20 years was trouble and toil, and there was very little to envy me. And I come now to make atonement. This period that I suffered and so on, I wish that it would be an atonement for the past, because my prosperity, which seemingly I have now, is not as a result of anything that I've taken from you. And I hope that we could live together in peace. This, in a sense, the way Hirsch writes the introduction of Yaakov and Esau. And he says that the vineyards, that the way they confronted each other, what did Yaakov have and what did Esau have? Yaakov was a person who, he had a family, and his whole life centered about his family and everything that he labored for. It was for his wife and his children. And in the meantime, Esau was like a finished man. Yaakov, here says, was achieved after struggling for 20 years. It seems that Esau had everything in full measure when he went home, when Yaakov went home. And while Yaakov, by the labor of his hands, had succeeded in attaining the happiness of being a father of a family, Esau had become a political personality, a leader of an army, an aloof with large troops, a great politician, and a world's figure. And this is the appearance, the way he describes, the appearance, the way Yaakov looks, and the appearance, the way Esau appears. And he says, throughout history, you'll have the same idea. Family life, which is happy and dispenses happiness in Yaakov on the one side, and the glitter of political power and greatness in Esau. He says, for thousands of years, this battle has raged, whether it suffices just to be human beings, and all the political, everything, the whole arena of world power, has only importance for ensuring the goal of human endeavors to be reached also only for human beings, or to the contrary, that the everything humane is only important as its trophies to serve as a background. So essentially, what is the most important thing in life? When you always think of the Jewish people, you always think as the loving family. That's the important thing in life. And anything else, just to sustain this family. This family is a temple of God. And others is just to achieve greatness and political power. And anything you may is only measured as a way of achieving the power. We could appreciate this democracy, supposedly pure democracy, would be more in the concept of Yaakov. Obviously totalitarian states and everything else. I mean, why do they want to have a lot of children so the children will be able to work and join the army and become a world power? That's the strength of the nation. This was Esau, and they had this confrontation. Well, Hirsch also mentions that we see the feelings of Yaakov as he approached Esau. He had feelings of guilt, you know, find the fees Esav is fine, they then die. So he says, we can recognize how different Yaakov's attitude to Esav is and what does the law mean. We can recognize what strength the consciousness of innocence gives and what an oppressive feeling, even an appearance of guilt awakens. So by Yaakov, when he spoke to Laban, he was able to, right, it didn't have such a depressing effect upon him. But now when he had to come and bow to Esav, so that really totally depressed him. But not only that, it seems by Yetzirah he was afraid that Esav would, says in the next sentence, Vayir Yaakov Me'oi, Yaakov was very much afraid. He said, Vayetzirah means he put face the force, armed force headed by Esav coming against him, and he was afraid that what will be, he can destroy him. So at the same time, how is he going to face Esav? So he came to the idea of dividing the camp, Yabe Esav, he says in the next sentence, to one camp, and he smites that camp. The Machne Hanishor, the other camp, will be able to flee. That's the first thing. And then it says, he prays unto God. So this idea of preparing oneself to approach an Esav. The Ramban says that the Torah gives us a blueprint for that. And he goes through this chapter and he points to very interesting ideas. The way he had previously spoken that everything that's going to happen in the future is nirmaz, is alluded to in the lives of our fathers. And Yaakov was that parent of Golos that we're living in. Let me just take some quotations on these various simply from the Ramban just to get a feeling of the reaction of Yaakov and what he's supposed to do. So he says that, he starts out by saying that this chapter was written, the main thing to teach us, to impress upon us again, that God has redeemed his servant and saved him from stronger hands. That if one is a servant of God, he can rest assured, right, that he will be rescued by God. He will be saved by the Rebbeinu Shlomo. There will be malachim of God that will come along to malach of Yitzhak, and he will save him, the folder of Papa, in all his ways and all his endeavors. And it also teaches us at the same time that a person shouldn't have faith only in his thickness and his righteousness, that he's a tzaddik, nothing will happen. But you see, Yaakov Avinu was mishtadel, he tried to his best of his ability, Bahatzolah, in trying to bring about natural ways or traditional ways in how he could achieve safety. That we see from here, because we see he divided his camp, so to say. Also, it alludes to the fact that everything that happened to our fathers with Esau will occur again and again with us and the children of Esau. And it teaches us that we should accept the ways of this tzaddik. And how do we accept the ways of this tzaddik? That we should prepare ourselves for three different approaches. One is tefillah, prayer. The second is dorin, sending a presence, seeking to appease and to pacify. And the third is like saving oneself, like in war. That sometimes you might be in battle or you run away. And they have learned this from this chapter, he says, as I will allude to. Now he starts right away, and he says that Yaakov sent Malachi to Esau. But was he right in doing this? Why did he send Malachi to Esau? The Ramban says, since he was going to the south of Israel, and the south of Israel, one of the ways to go there was to go through the land of Edom, on the Transjordan side now. We would travel down through Jordan and so on, and Edom would be down with Saudi Arabia. So if you were going to the south of Israel, you would have to go around that way. You would be in the environs or close by to Esau. Not in Esau, but not far away from Esau. And Yaakov Avinu was very afraid that Esau would come along and he would hear about him and he would attack him. So therefore, he wanted to first pacify Esau. How do you pacify Esau? By appealing to him, by sending him presents. What is the present achieve? So there's a lot of psychology in really sending presents. Hirsch notices, he says that the presents were sent a little bit one group, and then a little bit later another group, and then a little bit later another group. Now, why did he do this? He did this, he says, for the psychology. Sentence 19 tells them, like, when Asa will say to you, what is all this? So you should tell him, Mincha Yishlucha. This is a present for Asa. And Yaakov is coming after us. Your servant Asa is sending, Yaakov is sending his present, and he is following. And then he told the second group to do the same. He told the third group to do the same. It means there was a distance, obviously, between each of the groups. What was the idea of making this? So he says the following. He said, he lays special stress on each leader of the drove, leading Esav to expect to meet Yaakov immediately. And then, instead of meeting Yaakov, another gift comes forward. Because they told him, this is a gift from Yaakov, and he's coming. So instead of Yaakov, another gift. So repeatedly, he says, Esav may work himself up to an outburst. And then, instead of the opportunity for this outburst, there's a new appeasement. There's another present. So therefore, he loses his outburst. And then he gets himself up again, and instead of facing Yaakov, another present. And after it happening a few times, he already can't get himself up again. You know, a person can't always get his anger together. So he says that Yaakov had a deep psychological insight. And he hoped in this way that there would be a cooling down of Esav's wrath, of Esav's anger. So he used every possible method. Yet the Medrash says right away that Yaakov Avinu was wrong. Why is it wrong? It compares in the following. It says, Magzi ve'oznei telet. If you're going by, don't go out of your way to grab hold of the ears of the dog. What does that mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Esav was going along in his own way. He never thought of coming to you. So why did you have to go and approach him? You shouldn't have gone ahead and say, you should have gone in your way without approaching Esau. You weren't confronting him. Maybe he would come and get you. Maybe he would run after you. Yeah, but maybe he wouldn't even see you. He wasn't even thinking of you. So why do you go ahead and you start negotiations with Esau? And then he says, the Ramban, that this alludes to what will happen in the second Beis Hamikdash, the destruction. He says the kings that were serving in the second sanctuary in the Beis Hamikdash, they went ahead and they made peace pacts with Rome. They made peace pacts with Rome. Why did they have to start to send shluchim to Rome and to make peace pacts with Rome? He says some of them visited Rome, and this brought about Nefilosom v'yodom, the downfall of the Second Commonwealth in Israel to the hands of the Roman Empire. He says, and this is Muskar B'Divir Rabbeinu, whom of course in the scoring, and this is something which is mentioned in Midrashim. So it seems that the idea was that although there was a mighty Roman Empire, but they would have left the Jews remain in Israel peacefully. It was only because the Jews felt that they're so weak and they're mighty that they have to beg them to make a pact. The Benjamin will take care of you. You didn't have a confrontation with them. Don't be so politically astute that you have to go and make a manipulation and see if you can make a pact with them. Once you got them in, you brought them in, so what you did was become subservient to them. Of course, we could understand the application to our day. And even in our day, we have the same fight going on right now in Israel, the same debate. The Peres plan is to bring in all the nations and bring in Russia. What are you going to go and grab the bear by the ear? It's not bothering you. Everything is quiet. Keep Russia out of the Middle East. What are you going to bring in? So it seems that they had that same kind of an understanding with Rome. And the Chazal said that was wrong. The same way that Yaakov Avinu did not make a correct decision over here, according to the Medrash. The Medrash says, you walk by the dog and he's not looking at you, don't grab him by the ears. Because then trouble can start. Now, what did he do though? His appeasement was, in the language, say, in sentence 5, Kai Aima Osemrim Laveni Laesav Kei Omer Abba Yaakov. Now, Yaakov Avinu had to humble himself to Esav. Now again, this is something which is a lesson for future generations also. Now Yaakov Avinu, because he humbled himself, he was also in a sense, punished that Esau had kingdoms before him, had Alufim before Yaakov did. But he had no choice but to humble himself. And that, they say, he was right in humbling himself. It says that if you're going to see it, before you go to visit Rome, the Romans, for political reasons, you would learn this chapter. And whenever you learned this chapter, nothing happened to you. One time he didn't learn this chapter, and then he says that it was a disastrous political mission. That is that a Jew has to be prepared regardless, no matter how much he goes against his grain, to say the word Kohamar Abdecha Yaakov, to Esau, knowing that he's superior morally and ethically, knowing that Esau is just a political power with it, but there's no real essence to him. Yet, if he is on top and you have to have him, you have to say, Kohamar Adreni Esau. Humble yourself in that sense, because it really doesn't mean it. Ramban here, however, says that the humbling, the sublimation, whatever, was to show Esau that he has respect for him as one has respect for an older brother. Because for an older brother, we know that the custom is that a younger brother gives struggle to the poor, because it says, honor your father and your mother, so the word honor, es, or viva means, or viva agrobo. So therefore, he's showing Esau that the deal that they had between them really has no practical merit and relevance, because he still gives him the honor. And at the end of the chapter, where it says that they buried Esau and Yitzchak, the end of the Mishlah, where Yitzchak died, so it says there that they buried him. Who buried him? Both sons buried him. Yet it uses the expression there, Esau and Yaakov buried him. I did not necessarily look back here, but Esau and Yaakov both buried Yitzchak. It's in chapter 36, sentence 29. Vayikru Esau v'Yaakov v'Noach. Now, in previous, by Avram, in chapter 25, when Avram dies, so it says there that his sons, Yitzchak v'Yishmael, one of them. So Yishmael was really the older, so what was the reason? So the answer was there that actually there Yishmael did Shuvah, so he let Yitzchak go before. How does it say there? 25, chapter 25, sentence 9. It says, Yitzchak and Yishmael bonov. Yitzchak and Yishmael, actually it should have said Yishmael and then Yitzchak. So some say that the reason it says Yitzchak is because Yishmael did Shuvah, so he recognized the greatness of Yitzchak. But here it quotes Esau first, because Esau still didn't recognize Yaakov, and Yaakov did give him the covenant of the oldest son. So therefore Esau's name was mentioned first. So Yaakov is trying to tell him that I give you all the covenant of the oldest son, and there's no problem there. Now, by Yira Yaakov Ne'eh, what was he so afraid? He was afraid when they came back, it says a little bit further, and they said, we came to Esau, we're going back to the beginning, sentence 8. It says, Yaakov was very much afraid, and he divided the tent. So why was he afraid? The Ramban says he was afraid because his messengers came back. Although it doesn't say in the Torah here that they came back and gave him the message. But here it says they came back and they told him, Esau ignored us and people. He didn't respond at all. He looked at us, he didn't even want to look at us. And not only that, they said, he went ahead and he's coming with a group of 400 people. That, Vayetzelot. So Yaakov Avinu really was concerned because the fact that he ignored them, like it says, Leono Esonu, Leshilach Uchadav Shalom, he didn't say give my brother Shalom or anything. So that itself showed you the hardened spirit of Esau. And that's why Yaakov was extremely afraid. Yet when Yaakov came a little bit later, if you follow that, and he had the confrontation with Esau. What was the confrontation? He met him, and how did they react? So later in sentence, after further on, there when Yaakov finally meets Esau, it says there that Esau fell on Yaakov's neck. And chapter 33, sentence 4, by yours, Esau begrosso. Esau ran to greet him, by a kateyum, and he hugged him. By Yipol al Tzavoro, and he fell on his neck, Vayishokeyu, and he kissed him, Vayitru, and he cried. Vayitru, they both wept. Now, what kind of a relationship was this? Was this honest or not? So Hirsch says here, this purely humane feelings overcame Esau. A kiss, he says, can be false. And that's why the kiss has dots on it. They say he kissed him with his teeth, perhaps. If you kiss somebody, it can be false, especially in the Middle East. You see how it helps. You know, I mean, they put a dagger in the back, but that's a natural thing. A kiss can be a false kiss. But one thing can't be false, and that's tears. The fact that it says that they cried, tears are not false. So Hirsch says, this kiss and these tears show us that Esau was also a descendant of Avraham. It's a deep thing. In Esau, he says, there must have been something more than just the wild. The sword alone, simply raw force, is not able to do that. He says, otherwise, how could Esau have dominated the world? He says, raw force could not have dominated. But you have to say, he says, Esau has gradually more and more towards humaneness, and so on. Now, that Esau was touched by this relation, by this confrontation, with great interest. A lot of times we see a rush, we see people that we doubt and we're very skeptical. I mean, during the period of Sadat, for example, I was very skeptical. Whenever I see a picture, I was skeptical about it. I mean, he was a very shrewd, calculating person. So obviously, his peace was basically for him. But there were moments like when he would get up and pledge, my children won't die anymore, fleeting moments. And they were emotional and sentimental sentiments, expressions of sentiment. Is it possible for that to have been an honest sentiment? That was about it. Was it true? Or was that also, we understand that Chris says that this is not over, but there were some expressions, I don't know if there were tears, moving moments. Is it possible for them to have that moment? So it seems from him that Esau can have that, that there is this feeling in Esau, being this child of Yitzhak, supposedly about Avraham, Zerah Avraham. So we would assume that even by Yishmael, perhaps that sentiment can also show itself, although he's very strong against everything that Yaakov stands for, because Yaakov stands for morality and spirituality, and he stands for that. Yet a little bit came out when they found each other, and this is an important point that Hirsch mentioned. Now Yaakov Avinu, the Ramban said, prepared himself for three things. And this sentence 9, relating back to the beginning of the chapter, in sentence 9, when Yaakov says, the other will fall away. What's that? If Esau will come to one camp and they oppose and he will smite that camp, so the other camp, Aplepa, will be able to flee, to find safety. So what is the idea? It's the Ramban tells us in general that the books of Medrash, the Medrash teaches us their affairs, and we can appreciate that in our day too. What is the Derech Eretz, the way to conduct ourselves? It says, a person should not put all his money in one corner. That means, go ahead and divide it. That's what they're claiming now. All your money in stocks, you're in trouble. So they say, to place a little bit in this, a little bit in this. So in general, when there'll be the go, when one will suffer, a matnah nisha l'tleipa. That's an interesting medrash based on here. But it says a little bit more, it describes this. It says, what did Yaakov Avinu do? It says how he did it. He put on Zaymon Mitzvah. He was wise. He put the arms underneath garments, white garments that were Mitzvahs, outside. That means when he approached him, he approached with colors of peace, with white garments, never hoping that he would have to use that which was underneath it, which was the tools of war. But at the same time, he was prepared to go to war. And then he says, also, Yaakov Avinu realized, by saying this other matna will run away, it shows us that historically he knew that Esau will not be able, and this is also moving, will not be able to destroy all the Klal Yisrael. Because he may destroy one matna, but if he destroys that matna, there still be another little matna which will go ahead and be able to be saved. And we've seen that. I mean, we've seen that in our day. not big, we've seen that, that 6 million people, which is a mockment, but there were like 6 million left over. There was another mockment of the plate. No matter how severe the beating that Jesus administers. It also teaches us, it says, that Esau in the future will never be able or will never totally try to destroy our Shemenu, our name, to uproot us, but he will do evil with us, the same idea, Bitsaso Arot Shalayim, in some of the lands. Meaning, one king will be Gezer in his land against our money, take our money to enslave us, but another king will give us a place to be able to find safety, sanctuary, and will have compassion upon us. And you see that also historically. You go back for 1,000 years. When they started leaving Spain, they went to France, and then Poland, and Russia, and then the United States. And there was always, if the entire world would have closed up against the Jews at one time, there's been anti-Semitism in every country almost. But the mess was that it wasn't at one time. So there was always a plate. So the idea was that always being a machna anisha of the plate, that was the illusion, that the vision that he was shown at that time. Now, that the Ramban emphasizes again and again, this is what our parasha teaches us, that in the future, the hoya machna anisha of the plate, there will also be, and he says another reason too, when he different than Hirsch, the idea of separating the present, that he gives to Yaakov, the Beisav, the Rebbe, the Simon, the Neder, the Eder. There should be place between one group and another. So Hirsch said, so the Ramban says, Yaakov Avinu prayed to God by doing this. He said, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, if Tzoris comes upon my people in the Golos, which will come, Beisav, don't let it come continuously. Give them a moment to be able to breathe, a little space between one sorrow and another. The Rebbe Tosimu, they neither labor. One group will be caught, destroyed by Esau before they attack the second bit of time, a little bit of heaven. So when you look through the way the Ramban takes this chapter of 5, and you look through historically what has happened to us in the Parsha of Golos, you can appreciate this idea. In fact, and then we come to the Hidanosha. They touched in the bone and the sinew of the Muslim, the Hidadosha, and therefore we can't eat from the hip. We don't need it out of Yem Mazeh. They have it in Sense 26, where the angel came to wrestle Yaakov. It says when Yaakov was there by himself, he didn't get an answer, he prayed to God. Sentence 10, Yaakov starts his prayer. And then, after he sends everybody away, it says in Sentence 25, in 25, that Yaakov remained by himself. And a person came along with him, and he wrestled with him until the break of the day. When he saw that he wasn't able to overpower Yaakov, so he like hurt him, he touched him in his thigh, the joint of his thigh, and it was dislocated. And he wrestled with him. And then he said to Yaakov, please send me, because the Shachar has come up. And Yaakov said, no, you have to bless me. Now these sentences have a beautiful meaning. Night is the darkness of Golos. Morning is the ultimate light that will come about. This angel was the patron saint, we'll say, the patron angel of Esau. He personified Esau. And he himself, the strongest aspect of Esau, the angel himself, would be Esau, its whole power. So he captured Yaakov when Yaakov was literally Levado himself. But Yaakov, with moral strength and spiritual strength, was able to wrestle against this powerful force. Till morning came about, and Yaakov was limping because the damage was done. But he was still, it says, Yaakov, in Sense 26, he couldn't overpower him. He was able to harm him, but Tiga Kap Yeret Yaakov, right? He was able to move his thigh out of place, the joint out of place, but he couldn't defeat him. And then the morning came up and he said, please send me away. So Hirsch brings down to Medish, why did you want to send him away? Yaakov says, I won't let you go. So Yaakov says, why did he want to go away? Because Yaakov's opponent, this quoting here, can only fight as long as it's night on earth. And all, moreover, as long as it's night, he seems to be, if not the victor, but he has the upper hand. As soon as day begins to dawn, then it's the reverse. It's Yaakov who imposes the conditions at the end of the fight. So the angel says, send me back because the time has come for me to go and to praise God. In sentence 31, Yaakov called this place Peniel, and he said, because I've seen God. What does he mean, he's seen God? The Medrash says, Yaakov first asked him, are you a thief? They said, no. So he said, so why are you afraid of daylight? So he answered, because I'm also a messenger of God, but since I was created, I never had the opportunity to join in the chorus of the angels singing the hymn glorifying God until now. What does that mean? Esav's spirit, he says, is a malach. But his mission on earth is not accomplished until Rav Yavod Soyir, until the older son, meaning Esav, will serve and be his obedience to Yaakov. That will be when the Shachar comes up. When the Shachar comes up, when Yaakov is victorious. But Hashem saw it at the end, be able to maim him, but won't be able to defeat him. But then his mission is accomplished. So that's why he said, Shalfeni, send me, because this is the first opportunity I've had to join in the chorus of angels in lauding God, because my mission is accomplished. Now, the fact was that he touched Yaakov, and he caught him. He hurt him. He hurt Yaakov. So in that, the Ramban says, Vayar ki le'yochol lo, it says not only the Medrash, he quotes the Medrash, that Noga b'chol ha-tzadikim, that when he hit Yaakov in his thigh, in the joint of his thigh, he also touched all the tzadikim that were destined to come from Yaakov. And this specifically refers to the generation of the Shema. I'll tell you what that means. And the idea was, this again, he says, this was a remnant alluding to the other generations, that in the Zerah Shel Yaakov, among the children of Yaakov, Esav will become so strong that he will be almost successful in totally uprooting them. And that happened specifically in one generation, in the day of the Chachmei HaMishneh, like in the generation of Reb Yehuda ben Bava. It's also when we repeat the Dasar, we get the Rudim Malchus. The Reb Yehuda ben Bava and his Haverim. Like one of the rabbis of the Talmud said, if a person will tell me, give your life to sanctify God's name, I'll be prepared to give it. But they should kill me immediately. But the Derish El Shmad, in this era when they were trying to totally uproot this religion, I could not live through that generation. What did they used to do? They would bring bowls of metal and make them fire, the Labnimais on the yard. They would put it into a big oven. And then they would put it under the arms, and they would actually destroy them in that way. Take hot metal under the arms. He says, Ramban continues, that's the Medrash. Ramban says, so this Tana, Rekiva Rabba, said that he couldn't live for that generation. And then Ramban says, historically, from that time to his time, he says there are other generations that they did this and they did worse things. And we had to suffer it and we were able to overcome it. Just like it says, Yaakov came Shalom Hashem. Here again, I mean, we are talking in Ramban with 1200, but in his day we'll say, till our day. It says all this was Meramis. But still, Hayar Ki Le'yichol. And this is really something when you think into it, we are the fortunate ones, of course. And this should give us a new faith. Faith because it was all decreed before. And it was foretold that this will happen. There will be generations when you're under the hand of Esau, and this will happen. Now, Yaakov continues to Esau, and the first thing in chapter 33, I will move on to this. I think we've gotten the message across in this chapter. Chapter 33, Esav finally sees Yaakov, and actually it did have, as we said, it did have effect on Yaakov, because Yishokeyu, he actually kissed him, kissing, he said there's no proof, but the fact that he cried, that itself showed that there was a brother, a feeling of brotherhood. Now, this says that he saw the family and satisfied. Now, he lifted up his eyes, Esau, after kissing Yaakov and crying, and he saw the women and the children, and he said, who does this belong to? So he said, these are the children that God graciously has given your servant. Now, he didn't answer about the women. So it's interesting why. So there are two approaches here. The Ramban does stop on it. Ramban says that he asked him about the wives and the children, and he only answered him about the children. He said, because he didn't want to, because it's there for himself. This is the way a Jew, a person of Yaakov, he doesn't want to speak about his wives. And it says, Leirot Zalemer Shehim Nosho. It's not Esau. I mean, the true modesty, and Esau shouldn't ask about this the women. If he does, Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to discuss it. So he tells him in a modest way, he says, these are the children. And Esau would understand that these are the mothers. But Hirsch has a more modern point. He says the following. Hirsch wants to say that Yaakov Avinu answered him, these are the children, meaning that these are the children. Let me just get the language. In his reply, he says, Jacob speaks only of the children. And as this reply is also to the question about the women, he indicates with great delicacy how next to the grace of God, he has to thank his wives for the bodily and spiritual richness he possesses in these children. So it's like saying, who are these? So he shows them these are the children. And it's understood that these are the mothers of the children. That's the way Hirsch approaches it. But the Ramban, both of them speaking up, these are the mothers of the children. Ramban says that it's not proper for him to speak, about his wives with Esau. Now Esau says, come with me together. We hear that all the time. Esau says, come with me together. Maybe he still had the tears that he had, or maybe not. So in sentence 12, Esau says, let's go and come with me. So Yaakov says, I really can't go with you because I have to go very slow. I have all the cattle. Esau was with 400 soldiers. And Yaakov, Avinu, was going with his group. So how can I keep up with you? He says, I will go a little bit, sentence 14, I'll go slowly until I come to you, Seirah. Until I come to you in Seirah. So Yaakov said in sentence 14, I'll visit you in a sense. Esau was in Seirah. Things that Yaakov said, I'm going to come to Seirah. And then it says in sentence 16 that Esau went back to Seirah that day. So what does it mean, until I come to you, Seirah? Did Yaakov really mean he's going to come? So the idea was Yaakov could have gone back to Eretz Israel through Seirah. So Esau says, look, come along with me, and I'll follow you back, and I'll bring you all the way back to the Father's home. So really, I'll give you kavod, right? Come with me, and then when you come to my land, and I'll give you kavod, and I'll take you back to the Father's home. But Yaakov said, I can't really. I'm going very slowly. You go back to your home. And if I happen to come to your place, you'll give me kavod, and you'll go with me. But it's a long way off. So it wasn't like Yaakov told him clearly, I'm going to come back, because Yaakov did not go with him. But then he brings down. Obviously, Yaakov was too astute to go ahead. Esau's not going to cry all the way. He says, so this was also chokhmah that he answered in with wisdom. He didn't jump to take his invitation, because he realized what an invitation could mean. But there's another medrash. The medrash says that Yaakov Avinu had alluded to himself and men in the days of Mashiach when we come back to you. Because there we say, the olum meshiim v'har tzion, Lishpot, that the Moshiim, those that bring about the salvation, they will go ahead and they will judge our Esau. So the fact was that eventually, in the midst of Mashiach, we will once again be connected together. That will be when you recognize my position of Rav Yadlot Soya. I mean, he didn't tell us to, but that's what he meant. But until Rav Yadlot Soya, this strength is subservient to Yaakov, it's extremely dangerous.
become a little bit too close. We can only to steal and go to Rome. Edom will have its moments of compassion, of friendliness, right? But it should be an associate, a moment when you meet each other. You have to be compassionate and friendly. But the time has not come yet for this total, we say, intermingling, and what they call ecumenicism interfaith. Why? Because it's still Esav is going to Seirah and he wants to take Yaakov along with him. He's not ready yet to rob Yaakov's son. So there will be, as the Midrashim are aware, different managements and different ways for Esav throughout history to overpower Yaakov. And we're living through this, and for the life of me, I don't understand what their whole idea is. What is their idea? How could you approach? I mean, you live with them fine, nice, and mention it, and you have to give them dignities and things and everything fine. But we have a difference in a basic belief. How could they accept, if we say that there's an interrelationship between lay people in matters of secular or civil ideas, I can understand. But on a religious level, supposedly, how could there be, after thousands of years, where there's a basic difference from Edom? Edom should have different principles, which is different, like in the Nazim, different approaches that it takes, but it's basically Edom, and it's this idea of Rav Yad Metzoyer. You try, like the Medrash started in the beginning of the chapter, you try not to get near it. You try to avert it. If you meet, of course, with brotherhood, with respect, with dignity, but it's still not the time to go together. It can't be. It can only bring about what can bring about. Yaakov knew about that. If you go with Esav to Seir, it can only bring because Esav is still not ready to recognize the spiritual values of the Yaakov. So this is the parsha of Golus in this week's Seder, which, like the Beauty of the Sea said, whenever you have to have any confrontation or any relationship with the Romans, we first went through this chapter of the Mishnah, first parsha of the Mishnah, and then we knew how to. We recognize the main feelings that Esav had, and which Rish points out, which is very